Mallory Doharis.
And welcome back to the Faceless Men podcast covering HBO's Game of Thrones television series. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Jesse.
And you can catch us on iTunes.
And we're at the halfway point of the season.
You can find us at Facebook.
This is episode 5 of season 4. First of his name. And we see the director, Michelle McLaren, www.madblueabs.com.
Or you can contact us by email. And that is
facelessmencast@gmail.com.
The air date was May 4th, 2014. And we see a spike. It just keeps going. It's not really a spike, but it's a continuing trend of attracting more viewers.
Is this the highest they've gotten so far?
This is the highest it's ever been, and it's at 7.16 million. Yeah, 7,200,000 or so.
And countless people who pirate it.
Yeah, so this is just the Nielsen ratings, right? So the people who officially watch it when it airs on HBO. That's a ton of viewers for premium cable television.
Yeah.
And so we'll dive right into the content. The opening sequence, there's no change. We see the, you know, King's Landing, the Dreadfort, the Wall, Winterfell, Meereen.
Although you could see something beyond Meereen. There was definitely a city there. They just didn't have it animated.
Yeah, but I think it's the same sequence.
Okay.
No change in places, even though we didn't visit some of these places like the Dreadfort or Dragonstone or whatever the hell it's called. We start the episode in King's Landing, and it looks like it's the coronation of Tommen. Seems like a happy time.
Yeah, everyone looked pretty happy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it looked Bastard enthusiastic, Joffrey. Right? Yeah. I mean, it was...
I was pretty happy about it.
It was genuine enthusiasm.
Yeah.
So unlike, I don't even know, did we see Joffrey's coronation?
I don't remember.
I'm sure it was a sad, sad time.
Wasn't it right after Tyrion's wedding, right?
Maybe. I can't remember.
It's not something we'd want to go back and relive either.
And so we get the origin of this episode's name in the total, you know, in the whole coronation speech. We see that they name him first of his name. I'm guessing that there's been no other kings named Tommen. Baratheon. Sorry, I almost said Tommen Lannister. Which, I guess that means he's the first of his name. You know, he's not a first, second, third, fourth, or fifth. It's either that, or maybe it's the first of his name because he's the king, so it's like the first dude. He's the most important Tommen in the country.
That's an interesting thing. I have no idea about that. That's gotta have some historical origin.
Yeah, I'm sure that in the books they probably fully explain it in exhausting detail of exposition, but in the television series they don't give us much to go on. I'm going to go with he's the first Tommen ever to hold the crown. Like I said, it looks like it's a pretty joyous occasion. Everybody's clapping. We see afterwards everybody's going up and giving, I guess, their personal congratulations for becoming coronated. And we see, who do we see off to the side there?
We see Margaery locking eyes with Tommen.
Yeah, googly eyes.
Yeah.
Of course. Something breaks that eye-to-eye contact.
It was a perfect moment. Just Cersei just steps in, scowling.
She doesn't miss a beat, does she? She, of course, makes her way towards Margaery. Long may he reign, and all that jazz, which I guess is the appropriate phrase after a king is coronated. Long may he reign. And they start discussing...
Oh, yeah, I think... Yep, I found it. You're right. So if you had Henry VIII, it would be Henry VIII of his name.
Ah.
So Tommen
first.
So
you actually looked that up?
Yep. I'm sorry, that was a bit of trivia I wanted.
Okay. So I was right. He doesn't have the second, third, or fourth appellation on his name. Margaery and Cersei are discussing first Joffrey, right? Well, first it was, are you going to still want to be queen?
That was a bit of a tense moment, though, when Cersei walks over to her.
Yeah,
just see,
well, we don't know what's going to happen.
Margaery's just kind of like, what's going to happen?
But it's almost like she's making peace, right? Except we know she's not making peace, right?
That was a little bit of an apology.
I'll get to the look that she gives at the end of the conversation, but she basically says, so you're still going to be queen? And Margaery's like, I haven't given it any thought.
Ah, bullshit.
Yeah, which is a big lie, because she had a whole conversation about it with her grandmother in the gardens not too long ago.
Yeah, this is the part that really interests me, because you know Cersei's like, yeah, she's going to end up queen, and maybe I can at least repair this bridge. Because she already has a hold over my son.
Well, I don't know if it's so much as repairing the bridge as far as creating a back door.
I think you're
right.
You
know what I mean?
But that totally, Margaery didn't, she definitely could have like been honest and open and probably, you know, become a little bit closer with Cersei. But nope. She's just like...
I don't think it's possible for her to become closer with Cersei. Even
she could have left. She could have held out that hand, though, to...
Yeah, well, I think she tried. Well, I don't know. You're right. She's intelligent enough to know that that comment that she made is not going to sit well with her. So, but she's probably smart enough to also know that Cersei's not there to extend a peace offering either.
I don't know. I'm kind of interested to see how that plays out.
So Margaery makes a comment something like, we're going to be blessed with a bunch of weddings, talking about her wedding to Tommen and then Cersei's wedding to Loras, if that ever happens. And she makes the comment about, I won't know to call you whether or not to call you sister or mother.
Ah, that's a little dig, yeah.
But neither are really appealing, right? I don't think one's more appealing than the other.
You just see Cersei frown through both.
But yeah, so there's no peace here, and I think Cersei's playing a longer game here. Like I said, I don't think she's not interested in brokering peace with anybody. I think she's just there to create a back door, a facade of peace, maybe. Oh, I want her to think that I'm being all right with this. Actuality, she's not all right with anything. What do you think?
I don't know on that one. I don't think there's much she could do about it, so she's trying to make sure that she doesn't get, like, left out in the cold.
Well, she's definitely doing that, but I don't think that she's wanting to be friendly with anyone.
Maybe not friendly, but at least not, you know, I think she's enemies. I don't think she wants to be enemies with Marjorie.
I think she wants Marjorie dead.
Well, she wants everyone dead.
Well, that's her eventual goal she's working towards. This is just one part of her plan to put Marjorie in the grave. So after we fade out on Cersei's, for lack of a better term, frown, we go to Meereen, and we see Dany here is getting the latest news about Joffrey. So Joffrey's dead. It's good news. Very good news. We also see that she gets news that the second son's, now, Barristan said we took, but Daario comes in and makes sure, hey, the second son's took the Meereenese Navy.
He was pretty quick to correct him. He right. wants some credit for that.
But, you know, Dany kind of pauses like, well, who told you to do that?
You're like, well, no one.
No one, but, you know, I've been told you like boats. I guess she just doesn't like her generals acting without her knowledge.
Yeah, but if they're helping her.
I mean, it's all like they're taking the city, right? So to neutralize a city, you need to neutralize its armed forces. Part of its armed forces is Navy. It's That's on true. The bay.
Not only that, you don't really want them sailing away, and she's going to need that Navy if she wants to sail to Westeros.
Well, she needs the ships, but as we find out, I don't think that there's going to be any sailing to Westeros anytime soon.
Nope.
Barristan suggests that they might be able to take King's Landing with the ships, right? So we got the ships. She questions, you know, well, how many soldiers, you know, how many people will it take? And, you know, it can take this amount of people. Is that enough to take King's Landing? But there's a couple of opposing opinions here. Barristan thinks, yeah, we can take it. They've been fighting for a long time. They're tired. They're out of resources.
Jorah makes a good point there. He says, do you want to just take King's Landing? Is that all you're after?
He had like a twofold point. One, he didn't think, he's like, well, you're going to expend a lot of people taking King's Landing. This is not going to be enough. Because even if you take King's Landing, you don't want to be queen of King's Landing, right?
Yeah.
You want to be queen of Westeros. And this is not enough people to take King's Landing and then take Westeros.
Yep.
And then Barristan, you know, he pushes something out there saying, well, you know, people will flock to her banner once we get over there. You remember what Jorah countered with?
Yeah, he says they flock to whoever's banner is stronger, whoever looks like they're going to win.
Whoever they think is going to win.
Yeah.
Right. Just as they've always
done. And he's very right about that.
He is very right. I think Jorah has the best counsel here. But he has other news. Bad news.
Very bad news. And she's lost the two cities she's already taken.
Right. Yunkai and Astapor, right? So yeah. Yunkai has actually been, the masters have restored the rulership and re-enslaved all the free men of Yunkai. Yunkai is where they got the Unsullied from.
Yeah.
And they're seeking revenge. So they've made it known that they're seeking revenge. Astapor, the council that she put in place to rule Astapor, has been overthrown by Butcher. Well, there was
That's
not
an
much,
exciting name.
Yeah, there's not much detail given there other than, I guess, he killed a lot of people and likes killing people, whatever. The Butcher of Astapor. The liberation of Slaver's Bay is not exactly going according to plan. And so she's kind of come to she has to make a decision. Do I leave here and go to Westeros?
I think she made the right decision here. I'm going to stay and be queen.
I think so too.
If I can't rule three cities, how am I going to rule the entire seven kingdoms?
I think she made the right decision, but I think it's a blow to the storyline.
No?
Oh, well, we're not going to see fucking dragons in Westeros anytime soon.
I don't know. It depends on how easily she pacifies two other cities again.
Well, I don't... But she's got to maintain control here, right? Yeah. So to maintain control, she's going to have to station her men at these cities. That will not leave her with any resources to take King's Landing, let alone Westeros. I mean, she already had the problem. She didn't have enough forces to take Westeros. So she can control Slaver's Bay, but that's it. We won't be seeing... I don't see us moving into... Unless something big happens, like she...
I wonder if she's going to get another army.
Yeah, well, she either exponentially increases her forces, and that could be also a result of her dragons getting bigger. The bigger her dragons are, those take up larger and larger units of men as far as resources are concerned. But the way I, you know, just knowing that there's how many novels? There's a lot of novels. There's a lot of pages there. We're not too far into those pages. No. So I'm kind of metagaming it here a little bit. I don't think we're going to see Dany out of Eos, I think is the name of that continent. We're not going to see her out of Slaver's Bay and into Westeros for a long time.
I'm going to have to agree with that. I don't think she's going to...
And so the question is, now, I think this is the right decision for her. I mean, from a tactical leadership type position, this is the right choice.
Well, I wonder if she's going to go out conquering Eos before she even goes to Westeros.
Eos is a pretty big continent. So Westeros is kind of like the British Isles.
Yeah.
If you look at the map, you can see there's almost a one-to-one relationship between Westeros being the British Isles, Eos being Eurasia... And basically, Slaver's Bay is what we would consider maybe the Eastern Mediterranean and or the Persian Gulf.
Oh, yeah.
Because Braavos would be Western Europe.
Yeah.
But the problem is here is giving her enough story to make it worth my time to watch it.
I think you're right. I don't think there's going to be much story there. It's going to be her consolidating her power is what it's going
to
be.
Right. And to make the story interesting, you're going to have to introduce bigger baddies, right? For her to rail. Because these guys have been ants as far as in the scale of enemies go. Slaver's Bay, all these people are peons. I think that there's a problem here because in order to make her story more interesting, you have to introduce more interesting stuff, which again takes away from what I feel is the main thread here. You know, the Game of Thrones is the main thread. Who's going to be king?
That all happens in Westeros. That has nothing to do with Eos.
Right. So, you know,
other than, of course, all the politics. But...
Right. So I have issues as far as story goes with her being in Slaver's Bay. And so it'll be interesting to see how George R. R. Martin and or the creative team running the show handles that to keep things interesting over here. Because while I like the things she's done, honestly, they haven't been all that interesting.
No.
Getting the Unsullied, the Dothraki entanglement, getting the Unsullied, those were the two interesting things. Beyond that, it's all been...
Free the slaves.
Free the slaves, goody-two-shoe stuff, which is fine, but in the grand scheme of things, it's kind of like a distraction away from what I feel is the main storyline.
You would think that if she freed three full cities, that she would have a larger army than 10,000.
Well, 10,000 is just the Unsullied, right?
No, it was 8,000 Unsullied and 2,000...
Second Sons?
Second Sons, yeah.
Okay, so I guess none of the freed slaves actually joined up.
Apparently.
They're too busy partying up, man.
Apparently.
And getting re-enslaved!
Well, that's why you gotta fight for your freedom.
So we move from Meereen and go to the Vale. And we see Peter Baelish and Sansa going through what I guess is called the Bloody Gate, which is a very narrow and shallow gorge leading up to the, you know, like an entrance to the Vale or whatever.
Pretty much a small canyon.
Of course, Baelish points out that this is a tactical pinch point, so never ever has the Vale, or I guess the Eyrie, been sacked, been taken over, because...
It's built.
You can only go up the valley. Anybody that wants to go there has to go through the Bloody Gates.
Yeah, it's built on a mountain. In fact, there are three of those gates. Is there? Yeah.
So
up the mountain, switchbacks and shit like that.
Right, so the Eyrie, or the Vale, took advantage of their terrain and built fortifications around these things, which funnels, basically it's a fatal funnel of death, right? Yeah,
that would be brutal to take.
And it takes less people to defend, and, you know, Peter Baelish makes a note of this, that if you use them wisely, 10 men can be as good as 1,000.
Yeah.
Or something similar, he says. So, you know, it takes less men to defend this, because it is... You only put so many people in a row to confront the people, so if you narrow the front of your army... Three men abreast. It looks like you could actually fit more than 3 men abreast, but I won't argue that. It looks like you could fit about 6 to 10, up that. But, of course, when you get to the gates, though, how many people can fit through the gate?
I'd say probably is about 3.
So you only need as many men to defend that entrance. Even though you have thousands of people behind you, if they're behind a better defense, they can basically outlast any aggressors for prolonged periods of time. Basically, so to take the veil, you'd have to choke out their resources. From my understanding, it's beyond the Bloody Gate, they still have fertile lands and stuff like that where they can grow their own resources.
Yeah.
So it could take, ostensibly, forever to be able to... Or dragons. If you had dragons...
That would make quick work.
Because now you have an air force. Air superiority, they don't have anything against air, you know, to defend
you
against...
You just clear those cliffs so people aren't killing your people on your way up the canyon.
Dragons could take this. Men cannot.
What is the, isn't it something like 10 to 1 odds for the defender?
Well, I think I've spoke about this before. When I was in the Marine Corps...
You said 80% attrition rate is acceptable.
It was an 80% attrition rate. So it was more like 5 to 1. They're dug in, they have better defense, you know, they control the defenses and you have nothing. So you have to breach their defenses before you can even remove their resources.
Yeah.
We get another confirmation that Peter's been here for a while. They ask them to announce themselves. Peter announces himself as Lord Peter Baelish. Was he actually given a lordship yet? I don't know. Maybe no, since he's technically married.
No, he was off to be married, but he didn't have...
Well, technically he's married from what we learn later, right?
Yeah.
So he's greeted as Lord Baelish. You know, welcome back, Lord Baelish. And then we see him come into the...
Grand Hall.
We see Robin greets Peter as Uncle Peter. Wow, that's so fucking creepy.
That kid is so creepy.
The kid is creepy, Peter's creepy, and then the creepy kid calling creepy Peter Uncle is fucking just...
Super creepy.
Yeah, it makes it exponentially creepy.
I'm told this kid is a lot more sick.
Calling Peter Uncle is a force multiplier of creepiness.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm told the kid is supposed to be way more sickly than he is, so I don't know if they're playing that. I don't know what their intention is.
Well, if you're drinking from her tit, there's chances are you are sick. Mentally and physically, possibly. Mentally, definitely.
I think it's supposed to be physically, I believe.
Well, he's definitely mentally sick.
Oh, yeah.
So
there's
he gets
no question
that expensive...
There.
You see that animating glass bird toy? I mean, that can't be cheap.
That was a pretty sweet toy.
And then he chucks it right through the fucking moon door.
I wanted to make him fly.
So we see Lysa greet her niece Sansa, and she's aware of who she is, even though Sansa tries to use, you know, her pseudonym that she's Peter's niece. They drop some knowledge bombs on us here.
This is the first time that Sansa has ever met her aunt.
True, but I'm talking about as far as plots go.
Oh, yeah, Lysa killed Joffrey, or at least...
No. Peter killed Joffrey at the behest of the Tyrells.
I don't know. It seemed like Lysa had something to do with that.
Lysa killed Jon Arryn.
And faked a letter to the... Well, not faked.
She wrote the letter to Kat. But she didn't have any part in Joffrey's death other than being the cheerleader. That was totally...
That's probably the word for it.
That was a Tyrell move through Peter. All this time I've been operating under the pretense that the Lannisters fucking poisoned Jon Arryn.
Yeah,
because that's kind of what... That's what Ned kind of came to.
That's kind of what kicked this entire thing off.
Right. It was the thing that kicked this thing off. So Jon Arryn was poisoned by Peter. I don't know why. I guess did he expect Ned to come down and find the truth or something?
He pointed Ned towards the truth.
That's true. So Peter Baelish has been the force behind all this bullshit. All of it. Except for the shit that's going on in Eos. He's been the mastermind behind all this shit.
Yeah.
Which is, mind was kind of fucking blown here. I don't think this episode is a contender for best episode of the season, but this is some major knowledge they drop in this episode right here. That Peter poisoned, or Peter had Lysa poison Arryn, is what it is, because they had an affair, right?
While
they're in King's Landing.
Yep.
And they've already been married, I'm assuming after Jon Arryn's death, they got married secretly.
No, they just are lovers.
No. I am pretty sure she said, let's get married tonight, right?
That's what she wanted to do, yeah.
Because her reasoning was because we've already been married. Remember our honeymoon or some shit?
No, I don't think she said we've already been married. I thought she said we've already been together.
Oh, maybe.
As in like...
Maybe I need to revisit that.
That's the impression I got from
it. They've already made their vows to each other. Something like that.
I don't know about vows, but I definitely got the impression they'd been together for a while. And it makes you wonder because they grew up together. Her and Catelyn and Peter.
Right. Yeah. So how long has this... romance.
That's kind of what I was wondering.
So this extramarital romance been happening. Obviously, Peter plays a long fucking game here.
Yeah, he wants the throne pretty badly. This dude is nothing if not ambitious.
And then Lysa introduces Sansa as Sansa to Robin, but then tells Robin, hey, don't call her Sansa. So does anyone here really expect Robin not to call her Sansa? Ever?
That is just a bucket of crazy going on.
Isn't it? Hey, child, I'm going to let you in on a big secret, and you can't tell anyone.
Well, she's not exactly stable herself.
Let's be clear on that. There's obviously some insanity that runs through this line here.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Catelyn was so mild-mannered. So I guess, you know, they kind of like, let's get married tonight. And Peter's like, okay. And then she had, like, the Meister sitting outside, didn't she? Was that what I'm supposed to...
He kept trying to put it off. He's like, let me go take a shower let me go bathe first. And then she's just like, wait a minute. Opens the door and bam.
I thought that was the Meister, right?
I think so.
I think so. So they got married because I'm going to scream so loud the entire Vale's going to hear me while my husband's pounding me tonight. And she was screaming. They closed the scene with her screaming and Sansa listening to it. How did Lysa explain the screaming to her young son Robin? Because that was fucking loud. I wonder if that's I wonder if Bronn's chick, you know, the knight's wife, screams that loud.
Probably louder.
Because if she's screaming or that loud, that is one hell of a fucking hiding place they got out there to practice on.
Yeah. Yeah, because she was, that's stone.
She's a sick idea. I think she let Robin watch.
Oh, God.
I think she's that kind of fucking person.
I
don't
want to discuss that.
I think she's that kind of fucking person. This is how I imagined it. Sansa's kind of hiding in her little room.
Nope.
And then all three of them are up there, and like, Robin's observing.
He called him uncle.
That's what uncles do, man.
I guess that's what creepy uncles do.
That's what uncles in Westeros do.
It's a creepy uncle, right?
They're all creepy, man. Jamie? Uncle Jamie? Uncle Jamie did mommy, too.
Yeah, Uncle Daddy.
We go back to King's Landing, and we see the discussion of Tommen's marriage between whom?
That is Marjorie.
No. Oh,
Tommen's marrying Marjorie. That's what I thought you
said. I meant the discussions between
It's
whom?
Cersei and Tywin who are discussing it.
So, and she seems fairly fucking calm about this during this whole conversation.
This kind of confirmed it for me that she's actually offering the branch.
No, you know what this confirmed for me? That she's on a whole new level of fucking sadistic planning.
Eh.
So they're discussing Tommen's marriage. And Tywin's like, no jugglers, no jousting dwarves, and no fucking 77-course meals.
I think we can all agree with that.
So, right. So I've already put out a lot of money for this wedding. The next wedding is going to be mild. Because, why?
Tywin drops a bomb. The Lannisters are broke.
They've
been broke for
mine,
3 years.
Yeah, the gold mine hasn't been producing shit. He says the only people that can contend with the resources of the Lannisters is the Tyrells. Well, I would beg to differ that I think the Lannisters aren't in contention anymore. The only reason the Lannisters are anybody is because they have strong ties to the throne.
I think that, and they have the appearance of gold.
Perception is reality.
You can be on your third mortgage and drive a really nice car, but that doesn't mean you have a lot of money.
That's right. It's true. That's very true. The Lannisters are a great metaphor for the housing market bubble of the United States and the economic downfall.
I agree.
The assholes like the Lannisters are the ones who cause that shit. Blame the economic downturn on Lannisters. There's got to be like some kind of propaganda poster like that. Marge will be marrying Tommen in a fortnight, which is 2 weeks. And then a fortnight after that, Cersei's going to marry Loras. So she says.
I think she might just run. I think she might just escape herself.
I think she has some kind of plan. I do.
I don't think that
I think
she's
we're gonna
necessarily
be surprised.
Malicious about it, though.
I think we're going to be surprised about the plan.
You think she's going to just kill off Tyrells?
Oh,
Marjorie, Loras?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
I'd like to see her face off against Lady Olenna.
I don't know. What do you think her plans are? So you think
I don't
she's
know.
Gonna escape?
I really don't feel that she's all that malicious, but I don't know if she's...
You don't feel she's malicious?
Not here. Not at this moment. I don't feel that she's super malicious towards the Tyrells or...
I think she's doing a better job of suppressing her maliciousness, but I think she's malicious. Her son just fucking died.
That's why I think she's just kind of giving up.
No, that's not the way Cersei operates. Giving up is drink more wine and make things more brutal.
You haven't really seen her drink a bunch of wine yet. Not this episode.
She was drinking this episode. This scene she was drinking.
Oh, I guess you're right. I guess I didn't pay that much attention to it.
Yeah, she didn't lose her taste for the wine until Tywin said, you know, as a judge, I cannot discuss the trial with you.
That was a pretty good line.
And of course she's like, okay, well, she's not going to discuss the trial. She's going to discuss the Lannister legacy, which kind of, that does have an effect on Tywin, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which is like, so...
You'll start wars over our legacy.
You'll
start
turn
wars...
Turn your back on Jaime for not supporting the legacy. And what are you gonna... What does Tyrion deserve for throwing a fire on our legacy?
Basically burning it down.
Except he's not the one who did that. So.
Nope. I think we skipped something here, because they talked about the Iron Bank.
Oh, yeah. I was gonna say, they set up the Stannis /...
Davos,
yeah.
Lone.
Yeah, so whatever their move is, there's more supporting evidence because the crown owes a tremendous amount to the Iron Bank. Says something interesting there. You can't run from them. You can't cheat them. So it's like the Iron Bank is a force to be reckoned with in Westeros.
Yeah, he even called them. He said everyone's living in their shadows.
They even if they don't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dragons, I wonder what that's
going to... Dragons can melt a fucking bank, man.
I feel like that sets something up. I feel like something's going to happen.
Oh, of course something's going to happen here. And I think it's playing into Dragon... I bet we'll see Dragonstone next episode.
I think I... Yeah, I agree with that.
And we'll see something that... We'll start to see the Iron Bank stuff play
this
out.
This Golden Company. Or if they'll just straight up back. Iron Bank's just going to step in and back their champion.
I don't know.
That is Braavos, right?
The Iron Bank is based in Braavos.
Yeah. That's going to be interesting. I wonder if they're going to... I wonder who they're going to back. I feel I like know. Once they back someone, that person, you know, has a higher chance of winning. They're definitely going
to Well, they backed King's Landing for a long time, and that's why King's Landing's so much in debt.
Well, they didn't back, yeah, over the years, yeah.
Well, they've been backing them this whole time. Throughout the Five Kings War, they've borrowed money from the Iron Bank to fund it.
That's a good point, because they were in the strongest position.
Right. They are. I mean, if I was the bank and I was looking at all these pretenders, who would I freaking give money to? King's Landing.
Yeah. But at what point does that stop? And do you think they'll actually back another king, or if they'll just go straight to the whole murder? Just straight to Faceless Men.
I don't know. Are they connected with the Faceless Men?
No. They're Faceless Men or assassins for hire.
Are they? I don't know exactly how they work.
I know they're super expensive.
The Iron Bank can afford it. So we go back to somewhere in the Riverlands with Sandor and Arya, and we hear Arya's prayer. So she's got quite a list of fucking people on that.
Yep.
One person's no longer on it, at least. But that person's not the Hound.
Nope. I love this. I love this scene.
So she gets to the mountain, or just past the mountain, and Sandor's like, fucking how long are you going to do this shit? I'm trying to get to sleep, right? She's like, I have to say everybody before I go to sleep. He comments on her. He's like, you know, hate's as good a thing as any to keep a person going.
That's a very pessimistic view of things.
Well, I mean, it's a fire for sure. It's a fire that eats you up as well. If you're burning hate to keep you going, you're burning yourself. It'll be interesting to see how Arya's character eventually evolves.
I think she's going to become...
So, I think this kind
of
ties...
She's got a nice list of people to kill.
It ties in with... Barristan's advice to Danny a couple episodes ago, where he's like, well, you know, sometimes mercy is the answer. And she's like, no, it's all going to be about, it's all about justice or vengeance. Well,
what
it's
more
is, about
vengeance. What is justice except for vengeance by a third party?
Yeah,
hopefully
it's a
unbiased.
There's a fine line between justice and vengeance. Supposedly justice should be fair. And
supposedly justice is just vengeance to the right person.
True. So it's enacted by an agreed upon party, though.
And hopefully proportionate.
True, proportionate. So,
so it's
kind of...
proportionate.
Goes back to Hammurabi's code, right?
Yeah.
An eye for an eye. But they end up discussing their mutual hatred for the Hound's brother, the Mountain. What did you think about that scene?
I think it took... You see Sandor kind of hesitated once. He's like, well, what would you do if the Mountain was here? And he just kind of thought about it for a minute. And he's like,
tell him to shut up
so I can get some sleep. And then you see Arya roll over, and she finishes her list with the Hound, and he raised one eye. He's like, oh.
Yeah, like, I'm on your list. All of that goodwill that we've seen build up between Arya and Hound, even though, I don't know, goodwill may not be the correct terminology here.
A little bit of camaraderie.
Yeah, camaraderie here. That's probably the more proper nomenclature. It still hasn't earned him to be removed from the list without, you know, dying by the pointy end. Out of that, we come back to the Vale, and we see Lysa and Sansa discussing Kat's appetite for sweet things. I guess Kat was a fat girl at one point in time. She was getting fat, and her dad's like, hey, I gotta marry you off for political edge, so you need to stop eating that shit.
Yeah, that's...
That was the gist of it, wasn't it?
That is exactly what it was.
For, I got a political machinations in mind, and you gotta be slim and fit, bitch. So, drop the lemon cakes. But it turns ugly pretty quick, right? So it seems like, you know, it's a pretty innocent...
They mentioned something here. The whole thing about when Brandon almost killed him.
Right, so we've got this little bit of history before, back in the first season. Kat always liked sweet things. And of course, one of the sweet things was Brandon.
It's Brandon Stark, Ned's older brother.
Right. Who almost killed Peter Baelish when they were all young.
Yep. He dueled with... Well, he found out that Kat was going to be married off to Brandon, and he fought him a duel of honor. Well, of course, he got wrecked.
Fucking lost.
So wrecked.
Right, yeah, so he's learned since then he shouldn't be handling a sword. So he does everything through intermediaries now.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. So I wonder what happened to Brandon Stark.
Didn't he die? I think he died at the Battle of Trident when the Targaryens escaped.
Fuck if I know. I don't think that piece of exposition has been handed over in the television series yet. I could be wrong.
No, he's died.
Yeah.
I know that.
Obviously, he's dead because he's not taking up the thrones of Winterfell.
But I think that was the case. I think someone's out there, they can correct
He must have died in the war. obviously. Otherwise, he'd be in charge of Winterfell, right?
Yeah.
And not Ned. Good old Eddard Stark. But we find out Lysa's an extremely jealous person here. Whoa, who could have figured with all that mental illness? Because he turns on her, on Sansa, and is like, demands to know why Peter feels responsible for her. And she thinks she's what?
She thinks that Sansa might be having an affair with Peter.
Well, I think it's less of an affair, because an affair sounds like it's mutual. I think Lysa knows Peter well enough that if he was having any kind of relationship with Sansa, it would be almost forced, right? Or it would be forced. Lysa thinks Peter feels responsible for Sansa, and that's why he brought her here, because she's pregnant.
Maybe that's why his feelings for her are so strong.
By Peter, right. Yeah. Sansa finally convinces her, because she's like, you know, I'm a terrible liar, so all I do is tell the truth, and I swear to God that...
A little bit more fans. I'm just a stupid little girl.
Yeah, he keeps telling me I'm just never a stupid little girl. Finally, Lysa relents, and then we get their actual plan for Sansa. What's Sansa bound to do?
She apparently is going to marry Robin.
Oh, joy. One toad to another. Fuck, Lysa's psychotic. We don't have a lack of psychotic
people.
She is
batshit crazy. Yeah.
It seems like we got rid of Joffrey, and then we picked up Lysa.
She's not as violent yet.
I think she's pretty violent. We'll see.
So do you think that Peter's idea is just to basically, he's going to become Lord of the Vale?
So if Sansa marries Robin, and...
And he'll control Robin. He'll be a regent or whatever.
Because him and Lysa will be in control of the Vale, and since Robin's Lysa's offspring, if they're joined to Stark, that means they inherit all the Stark shit.
Yep, and that would be most of the North, or at least that would require a large part of the North with Bannerman. They'd have a pretty large army.
They'd have claim to most of the North. Now, actually getting people to flock to your banner is another fucking matter. Who else has designs for the North?
The Boltons.
The Boltons. So we're going to have Boltons and Baelish are probably going to end up tussling.
That will be interesting.
Two fucking psychos against each other.
Baelish is probably the more intelligent person as far as schemes, but he's not playing that kind of game anymore. This isn't a game of politics here. If he goes up against...
Well, this would be a game of swords.
Yeah.
Because it won't take politics to win this. It'll take manpower.
And that's where I think Bolton kind of has the edge.
Right.
Not just manpower, but just like sheer sort of viciousness. I don't know what you call that.
That and the Boltons are still backed by Lannisters, and if the Baelish covered his tracks pretty well, but if it ever gets out that Baelish was behind the murder of Joffrey, then you'll have the whole might of King's Landing come up behind the Boltons too. So we go from the Eyrie to the King's Road, I'm guessing, because the King's Road has trees planted all along it, with Pod and Brienne. It doesn't look like Pod has much in the way of horsemanship.
No, it looks like he's about to fall off at any moment.
Yeah, he has no equestrian skills whatsoever, and Brienne's not really enjoying her time, because it's kind of like he's slowing her down.
Yeah, she seemed just kind of
annoyed.
Very annoyed.
It's almost a little bit deeper than that, and I think I know why. We find out that they're going to the Wall, right?
Yeah, they're looking for Jon Snow, because apparently that's the only person that anyone knows who's... That's the last Stark left that people know where he's at.
Which is, you know, if Sansa was on her own, that would be the logical route she'd go to. She'd go seek out her last remaining family member, which is Jon Snow, at the Wall. Of course, no one knows shit about what's going on at the Wall, I guess. They
know there's dragons across the sea, but they don't know what's going on at the Wall.
Yeah, they don't know what's going on at the Wall. I think the main reason why Brienne does not like the idea of a squire is that she feels it's kind of like enslavement. Because did you hear her make the comment about, you know, I'm not a slaver either? You know, it's like, why don't you...
What was the context for that comic, because I can't remember.
The context was...
I remember it at the time, but I...
The context was, so she's like, why didn't you just stay with Tyrion? And he's like, well, you know, besides the fact that I die, I swore an oath. I've been bound to you. And she's like, well, I release you of your obligations. So that means you're free to go. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, why not? You know, I'm not a slaver. She asked, you know, what do you think they'd say if you went back, that I was a bad squire? So I think the biggest reason why Brienne does not like the idea of Pod, because she sees, because I imagine a lot of knights shit on their fucking squires.
Oh yeah.
So it's a rough life to be a squire. You know, imagine being a squire for the Mountain or something. Not saying the Mountain has a squire, but if you were a squire for the Mountain,
I'd imagine that job would have a high casualty rate.
Yeah, that job would fucking suck. I'm sure that there's this culture of, you know, using your squire as basically a whipping boy. And I don't think she likes the fact that, you know, it feels kind of like indentured servitude to her, and she doesn't want that tied down.
It's kind of what it is, like an apprenticeship back then. I mean, you owned that. You pretty much owned that person.
Only people of noble birth can become knights. I could be wrong.
I think that is correct, usually.
Pod doesn't seem to be of noble birth.
I thought squires were usually of noble birth.
True. I maybe mean,
lesser
historically,
no, lesser noble.
Real birth, world, but historically, yes. So it was an apprenticeship where eventually, you know, you learn the ropes by being the squire.
And then you became a knight.
And then you could be knighted, you know.
But that would teach you everything about court and politics and stuff like that as you went. Maybe I'm wrong on that one.
And then we go further down the road, maybe not the same road, but we come back to Sandor and Arya. And Arya is resuming, now that she's got Needleback, she's resuming her Bravosi water dancing training.
Yep. And was she actually? Yeah, she was near the water, at least.
She was near water.
That was actually a pretty place.
It was. Nice waterfalls. It was very, and then I think that whoever was filming there was like, wow, this is a nice place. We need to capture it. So you just see that big wide shot that they did.
Yep.
Yeah. So they're like, let's get this. We got to put this on screen because it's beautiful. And we find out because Sandor wakes up and she's gone. And, you know, of course, then we switch to Arya. She's actually practicing. And then he shows up unexpectedly. And he's like, well, the hell are you doing?
Yeah. And she
practicing ways to die. And then, you know, she explains, no, it's, you know, it's water dancing. It's like, well, who the hell taught you that? You know, the first sword of Braavos. Arya says he was killed. So I don't know if this is confirmation or if she's just assuming that he was killed. What do you think?
I don't know.
I mean, she seemed pretty convinced that he was killed, so I don't know if she saw it or not. But it seemed like, if I recollect, that she had tried to escape and he was fending them off and she couldn't see whether or not he died.
That's what I thought, too. I don't think she has confirmation that he died.
She's talking up Sirio, the greatest swordsman that ever lived, and then she explains who killed him, and the Hound's like, what?
Sir Meryn.
Yeah. He killed the greatest swordsman that ever lived? And she's like, well, he didn't have a sword. And he's like, the greatest swordsman who ever lived did not have a sword? Like, that is the most asinine thing ever. He's the greatest swordsman who ever lived. Of course he would have a fucking sword on him. Basically, he's like, you know, take your best shot. And bam, she goes right for his heart. Right for the...
I thought she tried to stab him in the stomach.
Well, it was about as far up as she was going to reach anyways. Yeah. So, but it was like dead center mass. She tried to put needle through. And of course, it just gets stuck. He rips it out and hands it back to her, though. And he's like, you know, the reason why Sirio died...
I thought he wasn't expecting this shot of her stabbing him. I thought he wasn't expecting that. That's the impression
I
got.
No, I think he said, go ahead and show me what you got.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think I got the impression that he wasn't expecting her. Because he seemed genuinely angry that she tried to stab him.
I don't need to rewatch that scene. But I thought that he basically taunted her to do it.
Because then he slapped her. He backhanded slapped her.
He did that, but I thought he basically prompted her to do it and then smacked her when she did.
I didn't feel that way. Maybe I was wrong. I'm probably wrong on that one, but that's not the impression I got from the scene.
But then he's like, Trent had armor and a big fucking sword. That's why Sirio died.
And then just walks off.
He did hand the sword back to her, though. I think Sandor is definitely...
I thought he was... When he grabbed it, I thought he was going to break it.
Oh, no.
It looked like it.
I think he respects Arya. I think he has a modicum of respect for her.
Yeah, that's probably the only reason she's still...
The only reason he's still with her is because she would provide him with money. But I think it's becoming more than that. I think over the course of their adventures that, you know, he's gained some small amount of respect for her. Because she's tenacious.
Oh, yeah.
And is unafraid of anything. I mean, obviously, he thinks she's fucking dumb as hell. But she definitely has some spunk, I guess you could say. We go to King's Landing and we see Cersei and Oberyn discussing his poetry.
She comes with a full complement of Kingsguard.
Sure. I'm sure she travels everywhere.
Lannister Guard, yeah.
No, I don't know if they're Lannisters or Kingsguard.
They were in red. I don't think they were Kingsguard. Kingsguard are the gold-plated people. Not the gold cloaks who are the city guard.
There's too much. Too much gold in Lannisters.
But like Jaime, the people who wear that kind of uniform, those were Kingsguard. I don't think she's not necessarily important enough to have Kingsguard.
But she comes there to request something from Oberyn. You remember what that was?
It was a little less of a request. It was more of a demand.
Well, yeah. So it's like, hey, you need to give this gift to my daughter, right? So it's been... So she's feeling bad that she hasn't seen her daughter, missed her name day.
Oh, I thought you were referring to the fact that she came up and like, hey, why don't you take a walk with me through the gardens?
Well, yeah. So he's like, yeah, how can I refuse a royal escort? And she's like, you can't. But the eventual request was to send a boat, a whole fucking ship, to her daughter in Dorne.
Yeah.
Which makes me think that her daughter is going to drown.
I don't think so.
I'm going to call this as a foreshadow. Her daughter's going to be on the boat. It's going to shipwreck and she's going to drown.
I think that's reaching. That boat will make it back to Dorne in this episode. Or in this season.
Yeah, I could be reaching. But as a writer, if I wanted to torment Cersei some more, I'd have her daughter drown in the gift that she sent her.
Oh, that would be great.
No, I'm just saying, you know, you want to do some fucked up shit. That's some fucked up shit. And as a writer, that's how I'd make it.
Yeah.
if I was a George R.R.M. writer.
But it came down to, like, he's like, we don't hurt little girls in Dorne.
Oh, there were some great lines here. So she's safe. You know, she was playing in the pool, right, with his own daughters. We don't hurt little girls in Dorne. And she's like, the whole world hurts little girls, which is true.
At least there.
Well, I think even here in the United States, in real reality.
There aren't that many people out to get children.
Well, yeah, but
not as many as it's made out to be.
I would say that
I know
girls,
the majority of people I know would go out of their way to
girls
protect
are held
children.
Back though. Hurt yeah. doesn't have to be physical now.
I agree with that.
Hurt doesn't have to be physical. There's a glass ceiling.
There is
it's there.
That is definitely
if you
on.
Have two X chromosomes or you look like you have two X chromosomes.
But they were specifically talking about, you know.
Oh yeah. I'm just talking about emotional, whatever, in general, not necessarily physical pain.
Their hurt is a bit more immediate.
It is a little bit more immediate. And also, she says something, you know, what good is power if you can't use it to protect the ones you love?
Yeah, after a comment about, you know, you're Prince of Dorne, and you're the one of the most powerful people in Dorne, and you're a renowned fighter. Everyone's scared of you, and you can't protect your sister.
Right, and she couldn't protect her son.
Yep.
And this little snippet of comment, though, would support your theory that she's actually calmed down and kind of gave up.
Yeah.
But I don't buy it. We go back to the King's Road with Pod and Brienne, and Pod is trying to cook a rabbit.
And a rabbit that is on fire.
Right, because what? What do you do before
the fur
you cook?
On.
You can't, yeah. I know you have to skin the motherfucker before you cook the meat.
I like how he's over there stamping it out.
Yeah, he's like, that rabbit's going to suck.
It's a good little tender.
Of course, you know, Brienne comes back with firewood, and she's like, fucking disgusted. Have you ever cooked ever?
I think
Have
she's
ever
like,
cooked ever?
What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. So we find out Pod has not really been a squire. He's been more of a what?
More of a waiter.
Yeah, a waiter.
Pouring wine. Yeah.
Yeah. So we see her trying to remove the armor, and he jumps first, you know, he jumps quick over there to try to remove it, and she...
He's like, this is what a squire should do.
What the hell? You know, it's like, I'm just trying to help you remove your armor, and she's like, nope.
You see him then, he goes over and grabs that knife and starts to skin that rabbit.
Right. So, I mean, he learns, and he's willing, and he's fucking enthusiastic about it. So, I mean, I would say he's a damn good squire if you're going to have one. She's like, have you ever seen any kind of combat? And that's when we hear him recollect the story about where he stabbed the spear through the guy's head, the Kingsguard, right?
Yep.
That was going to assassinate Tyrion.
Yep.
It was obviously sent by...
Was that?
It was
no.
Either sent by Cersei or...
I think
Joffrey.
No, Joffrey, yeah. Because yeah. That was when Joffrey... That was the Battle of Blackwater. Joffrey retired because he's a coward.
He is a coward.
And he basically... Because Tyrion had the nerve to actually do something that Joffrey couldn't. At least that's my speculation.
I'm unclear about actually who sent him, but it was probably Joffrey.
Yeah, I don't think... Cersei has no control over the Kingsguard.
That story earns him a little bit of respect. Brienne eases up. And she's not getting anywhere at the motherfucking armor. She's getting frustrated, and she's like, hey, come help me take this shit off. So their relationship is progressing. It'll be interesting to see what it is once they get to the wall, if they ever make it to the wall. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think they're going to make it to the wall?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so.
I think the odds are good that they're not going to make it to the wall.
I think they're going to make it to the Eyrie.
What? What if Sandor... I think they're going to make Sansa. What if Sandor Arya meets up with Brienne Pod?
That'll be an interesting combination.
Yeah.
I would love to see Sandor fight Brienne.
Holy shit.
That would be great.
How do you
to
think
watch.
That would turn out? I think it would turn out to be a draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be crazy shit. But if they make it to the wall when the wildlings finally get there, Brienne would make a would definitely make an impact for the Night's Watch. That'd be interesting.
Definitely agree.
Could you see Brienne being a sword maiden in the Night's Watch?
Oh yeah.
That would be because she'd, you know, finally have purpose, right?
Yeah.
Except for it wouldn't be the purpose she was sent out for. I don't know if she'd stay.
No, I think she's... At this point, she's sworn an oath.
Yeah. So she would keep going unless she had no other choice. And if the wildlings get there, she wouldn't have a choice.
I think she's going to find Sansa before she makes it to the wall. That's my prediction.
Mm, okay. Okay.
Or at least get a lead that changes her direction.
Mm, even though Peter's been pretty good covering his tracks, they went by sea. So I don't know where she's going to find a lead out in King's Road.
I don't know. Maybe just word. Word.
Yeah, a redhead showing up at the Vale.
Yep.
Oh, that's something that Peter alluded to, right? So put your hood on. Otherwise, you know, these guys tell all sorts of stories.
Yep.
So that was probably, now that you mentioned it, that was probably a foreshadow about Sansa's location becoming known to someone.
And if that location becomes known, I think Baelish is going to get some of the heat.
Oh, yeah, because they'll know that he took her.
Yep. And that leads back to who murdered Joffrey.
Yep. And that leads to Bolton's being bolstered by King's Landing.
I don't see him sieging the... I don't think he'll do a full siege.
Well, he won't ever be able to take... If they don't come out of the Vale, they won't ever be able
to take the Vale, but I don't think there will be a siege. If it comes to that, I think Bolton's smart enough to find a way around to take that castle without...
Well, they're all sneaks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know how that's going to play. I don't even know if there'll be a contest between Bolton's and the Vale, or Baelish in
particular. Oh boy, do I want there to be, though.
Oh yeah, I would let's just sick two bad guys on each other and fucking watch the aftermath.
I like the actual Vale people, except for the
leaders.
Yeah,
I think they're a little bit honorable. I think John Arryn was
that's
an honorable
their
guy.
Motto, isn't it? As high as honor?
Yes. So speaking of the North, we go beyond the wall to Craster's Keep, and we see Locke is watching Rast take some woman out to rape. Probably. And he begins stealthing into the keep, right?
That was a pretty interesting stealth.
It sucked because he hit that lantern.
Well, not only that, he just walks in there. Pretty much just strolls. I guess that's the way to do it. Stroll in there.
Like you belong there, right?
Yeah.
So that's one way, is to look like you belong there. But that place is so small that everybody probably knows everybody.
Yeah.
It's not like there's some...
But at first glance, it's like, hey, there's someone over there. True. Unless they take the time to go over and see who it is.
True. But still, he was trying to be sneaky.
They're all wearing blacks.
Well, he figured out that Bran was there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, after he didn't stealth past that lantern.
That's when he goes back and tells them to avoid the east side of the compound? Because there's some chained up wild dogs.
Well, before that, we go inside, right? To Bran and the Reeds and Hodor.
Oh, yeah.
So Jojen actually has a vision right there. He has the green sight. He has a vision. And he knows that Bran makes it to wherever the fuck he's supposed to go.
Yep, and they're just supposed to guide him.
You know, the way he says it, though, is kind of like, you know, we're just here to guide you, which means that we're expendable.
Yeah, the way he says it makes me think
that they're
going
to die.
They're not going to make it.
So he didn't... I'm going to say that he didn't really see themselves there. Bran makes it, which probably means Hodor makes it, because someone's got to lug his fucking ass around.
Yeah.
But the Reeds may not make it.
And you see a little bit of that, because he's sitting there playing with his hand. You see it, I think he knows the way he's going to go.
Well, right, because...
It's covered in fire.
Well, they said, how would they know, or something like that.
And he's just like, you'll know.
Fire. Yeah. Which, yeah, so that must be a foreshadow that they're going to burn. Not happy times at all. And then we see Locke, he comes back to the Night's Watch, and John makes a comment, you do move, or what does he say? You do move quiet. And I'm like, except for when he hits the fucking lantern.
Yeah.
Was that some kind of joke that, you know, that they played there?
I don't know what that was.
But yeah, so he returns from his scouting, and he's like, you know, they have some big dogs. He doesn't say wolf, but he says big dogs. And then we switch back to the Reeds and Hodor and Bran, and it looks like Carl's going to rape Mira.
Yeah, he has her all strung up like that?
Strung up on a hook and everything.
I think rape and murder.
Well, it was at least rape, because I think he was holding them all hostage. So I think he was just going to continue.
I don't know about he pulled out that knife, but I think that's his I think it takes a lot more than just rape to get Rast off, or run out Rast.
And Carl?
Carl, yeah.
Mm, maybe. He did make a comment about that she was noble born, so I think he's more interested in money than getting off, per se.
No, I think he likes to see the nobles brought low.
Well, that's true, too. Desperate Hodor cries are desperate. And then he makes a comment, he's like, you like it in the gutter. Is that like an anal reference?
I don't know.
I think it was.
I think that was a lowborn reference.
No, I think he's saying that she likes it in the butt.
that might be.
I think that's what he's saying.
But I kind of got the feeling like, oh, you've wandered out of your castle. You're down here in the gutter with us now.
No.
You like it in the gutter.
I think he's saying you like it in the gutter, as in I'm going to stick it in your butt. I'm pretty fucking sure. But Jojen tries to stop it, right? He's like, hey, if you stop, I'll help you. He's like, you know, I can see what happens today. You know, and then he goes into it further saying you're going to burn. I wonder, maybe that was what the...
I saw snow falling on your bones.
Yeah. Well, when he says I saw your body burn, that could have been... If Jojen doesn't die, then the vision he saw with the fire was what happens there.
Yeah, that could be.
So that could have been good on the writer's part, saying, make us think that Jojen's going to die, but really that was just a vision of what's going to happen here. But then, right when the deed's going to happen, we're all saved because the Night's Watch attacks. And of course, they all go rushing out. And then Locke comes in. He's going to take Bran to... I guess he's going to take Bran back to the Dreadfort.
That's what I got out of that. I don't think he's there to kill Bran.
Yeah, Bran's legs takes a fucking beating.
He cuts him just to make sure that
you can't feel anything, can you? So you are Brandon Stark. We called it, Jesse. We called it. We saw some Hodor being warged.
Yep.
And he's a badass.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love that. Just crush it. Just rip that guy's fucking head off with your bare hands.
Yeah, he almost did rip the guy's head off. So, which we saw a good makeup shot, a good effect shot later on in the episode of
Bone
dropping. Yeah. There's like fucking holes in his neck. It's crazy.
It's like his head was dislodged and you just see the bone where it sheared off.
Yeah, it was brutal.
That entire fight, do you see Jon Snow and the rest of those Night's Watch sweep it in like badasses?
Yeah, they do pretty much eliminate all those traitor scum.
Pretty quickly, too.
The hive of scum and villainy there is no more. One thing that I noticed, though, that bothers me, or doesn't bother me, but makes me think, is when Bran stopped warging Hodor, Hodor snaps out of it, and he doesn't know what the hell's going on, of course, because he's just
You see him stare at his hands.
He stares at his hands, because remember when he got speared? He stared at his hands, and he's like, Hodor, Hodor. And then this time, he looks at his hands like, what have I done?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's going to come back, or that little thing is going to develop. You know, Hodor doesn't like what the fuck's happening.
Doesn't like being used like right. that. Being used to kill people like
right.
that.
Right. So I wonder if we're going to see more of that thing develop. Could become an issue in the future. So now we're at a crossroads. Jojen's like, hey, if you go, because, you know, the Night's Watch are wrapping shit up. Bran's calling out for his brother.
You see the fight with Jon Snow and Carl first.
No, this is before Carl. He's outside now, and then he goes inside.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So right now, Jojen's like, hey, if he hears you and he comes, he's not going to let you go north. And you got to go.
That's
north.
Very true, yeah.
Again, we commented on this last time that this was not in the book. Bran and company being at Craster's Keep was not in the book.
Maybe someone can fill us in now.
Locke being up here was not in the book.
I was told that part of how these people died originally was that
the White Walkers got them, right?
Yeah. I feel like that may be the case, that they were just cutting out some CG here.
Well, I think that they
But then
just
again,
developed...
they used CG. For Jojen's vision.
Well, that's not a lot of CG.
Yeah, it wasn't a ton, but...
just layers and transparency.
Yeah.
But I think what it did as writers, it allowed us to see interaction between characters that we weren't going to see any interaction on. Without actually ruining the plot line, right? And so now we can basically speed up Bran's path to whatever fucking tree Godswood he's going to. And then it also allows us to see more Jon Snow and everybody thinks he's sexy.
Maybe that's the case, because they don't want to go and do the Bolton story and like advance that past the point where they're like two books ahead or whatever. So they've got a limited number of characters they can use now to advance the story.
Right. I think this is just...
And you have Bran, and what would he be doing? Traveling. Right. Yeah.
He's on a walkabout in the beyond the wall.
And that's not super interesting.
Right. So I think what it did, it allowed us to see these two character storylines progress. And we got some story economy here because they're sharing scenes. So there's an economy to story, which has been a recurring thing as far as book versus television. Television series is cutting out characters. It's consolidating storylines. And I think this is just more of that. But it's done in a way in which we see two characters on screen. It's an interesting scene. It's going to be like a shortcut to their eventual, at least for Bran, it's going to be a shortcut, I think. Well, going back to the battle, though, we see Jon goes inside and he faces off against Carl, right?
Yeah. I feel like that was a bad idea on his part.
Going inside? Alone?
Yes. I mean, you've got a sword. That's an enclosed space. That dude is wielding two knives. You burn him out. If you're going to burn the place anyway, burn it out.
There's
a bunch of people in there.
Yeah,
still.
We don't know if there's innocence in there, right? Carl, the best fucking assassin in Jyn Alley, or whatever the fuck his title was, is facing off against Jon Snow with two daggers in an enclosed space. He seems to have the advantage. In fact, he does get the advantage. He's about ready to kill Jon Snow, and he makes this comment right before he is getting ready to put the death knell on him. He asks him, you know what's wrong with honor? Then he gets a knife in the back.
Yep.
I don't know what's wrong with honor, but you know what's wrong with dishonor? You get fucking knives in the back.
Yeah, you get a lot of enemies. Yeah.
You create a lot of enemies.
And then he turns around to get that girl and just sword through the face.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yep. Yeah, so the sword went all the way from the back of his skull out of his mouth. It was great. That was a great effect.
Yeah.
And also the sound. Whoever the Foley artist was, that was a good job, Foley artist. The sound was
skewered in the face.
So then we cut outside to Rast, right? And he's a fucking coward running away. And I'm like, the first thing I thought was, this motherfucker's going to get it.
That's I'm like, I couldn't remember at first, and then you see it, and it's like, yes,
age. Yes, I
yes,
know.
You're about to get toasted.
Yes, he does get ghosted. And then we cut to the end. So the Night's Watch have taken the keep. They only lost five brothers. One of them wasn't really a brother.
How many did they say was in Craster's Keep?
I don't remember how many they said was in Craster's Keep, but I'm thinking about a dozen or so.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's somewhere between 10 and 20.
Yeah. So they go in there with a limited amount of men. They lose four brothers plus one spy, which they don't know. There's no big loss.
It's standing around his body going, what happened to
him? Yeah, I wonder
him?
What happens. A listener needs to tell us what happens to Locke in the books.
If it doesn't spoil anything.
John is asking Craster's women, hey, you should come with us. We'll find you work. You can do some stuff. And they're like, no, Craster beat us and did worse. And then your traitorous brethren, the other crows, beat us and did worse. So, you know, we're not going to go 3 for 3 here. We're just going to go on our own. But they do tell them to burn it, right? Burn this fucking place down. Because we're not staying here, so burn the fucker. And of course, Jojen's vision comes true. He ends up burning.
Yep.
And Snow will probably fall on his bones.
I think Snow already did. Putting a sword through the back of his head.
You're right. Hey, good catch.
That's exactly what I was thinking when he first that Snow will fall on
you.
Your
know,
bones.
I like, totally missed that.
I'm like,
Jesse.
he's speaking of Jon Snow.
Here. Right. So it was the classic play on words, right? So yep. Jon Snow did fall on his bones. Crack his fucking bone. It's a good catch, Jesse. Ghost comes back to Jon. So now they got a dire wolf at the Night's Watch again.
John, I don't know what's going on here. Because after he comes back from the wall, he like basically, he doesn't say any. Like, I feel like they could have done some service here and been like him talking to Sam like, I missed my wolf or something.
You're right. He didn't mention Ghost at all. But they did show us where he was. And I'm assuming this is not where he was. And we kind of discussed this last time because it was like, yeah, they kind of just, it's almost like the writers forgot about Ghost when John was fucking around up north with the wildlings. Didn't say what happened to him, where he went, but he went all the way back to Craster's Keep and got caught.
Maybe that definitely tied some.
But that doesn't make sense. I mean, because they are way the fuck away from here. Yeah. And then he gets caught at Craster's Keep. Yeah, there's some. So I think this was a plot hole. What the fuck happened to Ghost plot hole. But it's not very important. It's not. I don't think it's worth griping about a whole lot. I'm glad to see Ghost reunited. Maybe that was the purpose of this storyline.
I feel like overall there should be more direwolf.
Maybe this was the purpose, the eventual purpose, the ultimate purpose of this storyline. So they never come up here, right? According to the books, from what we've heard. So maybe they did this to bring Ghost back into the storyline. Because I don't know what happens to him in the books. Maybe a listener can let us know what happens to Ghost in the book. All right, so now we're going to go into our feedback section. It's a little bit short this week. I think that overall this episode was less exciting. It's definitely not going to be a contender for the best episode of the season. But there are some significant knowledge bombs dropped on us, especially the Peter Baelish killed John Arryn thing. Major. Coming from Facebook, Laws S says, some people have been calling it boring. What the fuck? It featured Lysa revealing that she poisoned John Arryn on Littlefinger's advice, and that they were having an affair back in King's Landing. Right, that's pretty fucking interesting, like I just said. Two, a good fight scene with the bonus of Hodor killing Locke. We saw a well-established show villain from season 1, Rast, get killed off. And we got, in his honest opinion, massive revelation that the Lannisters are poor, right? Skint, he says. So yeah, they're broke. That was all points that we definitely covered in our cast, and I agree with the exception of, I don't know if I'd consider Rast a well-established villain. I mean, he's established, but we didn't see much of him, really. He's definitely a villain, but not. He's not a primary. He's more like a henchman. Yeah. I think villain is the word I'm getting hung up on. We saw a well-established villain in Carl die, but then the henchman Rast. Maybe he's talking about Carl instead of Rast.
That may be.
Yeah.
I think those two are a little, at least in the book, those two are pretty even.
Are they?
From what I got. Now, granted, I didn't read this that far. I didn't even get to the part where Mormont died, but I definitely got the impression that they were
assholes.
Yeah.
Of equal
stature.
Coming from Google Plus, Remy L. says he really enjoyed it, especially the badassery of the remote control Hodor. Yeah, I agree. I think we called that, me and you, Jesse, we called that there's going to be some Hodor warging action going on. And if he does do that, then there's going to be some definite brutality. Zian says, very good. I'm glad they didn't take 3 episodes to make it to Craster's. And I'm glad Brienne is heading north. Many potential adventures to be had up there. Yeah, like we were discussing. That's actually wide open for Brienne.
Yeah.
Do they cross paths with Sandor and Arya? Do they make it to the Vale? Do they make it to the Wall? Who knows?
Or maybe get recaptured by the Boltons.
Get captured by the Boltons? Or run into the mountain?
Baron the Lady Fair.
Oh. Yeah, there's some bad blood there. That won't turn out good for them this time, I don't think.
They have to go through there.
No, well, do they?
That's the only... I thought they had a choke point the way north. Or maybe that's wrong. Maybe
They'd have to go through...
I'll look at the map.
They'd have to go through the Greyjoys, at least.
Yeah, at least. I feel like there should be a lot more of the Iron Islander stuff, but I don't know...
We have yet to see anything of Yasha. That's Theon Greyjoy's sister. Or any of the Iron Islanders.
I feel like they're going to play a larger part. They should probably have more of a story. I feel like that may be not necessarily a big reveal at the end of the season, but like I feel like that's going to start playing a bigger part. I feel like there's definitely they got to hit on that in the next episodes. But I don't know if that's like one of those things that's later in the books, maybe. So they aren't going to feature it this season. And they're trying to wrap up the stuff in this season.
I don't know how it's going to play out with Greyjoys. I assume that we're going to hear something from them before the end of the season. I can't imagine them having Yasha sit out a whole season.
I agree.
I mean, just from keeping actors on board.
I mean, they show Locke already at the wall.
Yeah, I don't know what that is in the timeline, but
well, yeah,
No.
Because Locke left the same time as
they sent
Ramsay,
the bastard, down there. So I think that's going to definitely we're going to see that coming soon. I mean, we still have 5 episodes left in the season, so there's plenty of time for development.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Greyjoys are one of the things we haven't seen yet. And then, of course, I read off Ronnie P's feedback from on last episode, and he responded, but I'm not even going to deign to reply. I'm sure that'll just piss him off.
He'll enjoy that.
And this has been the Faceless Men podcast covering HBO's Game of Thrones television series. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Jesse. Valor Megulis.